Okay, this is a work session of the North Dakota Public Service Commission on the Otter Tail and MDU Jamestown to Ellendale 345 KV transmission line. It's August 19th, 2024. It's case number PU-24-91. I don't have anything else before turning it over to the portfolio holder. Commissioner Fedorchik, did you?
No, I don't.
Okay. It's all yours, Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Well, thank you. I guess going back to our commission meeting last week, I proposed an order and we got into some discussion. And so I think there's those discussion items that we need to go through. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to give just my question or lay it out. And Randy and Julie and staff can answer this. Looking at that Jamestown to Ellendale line, we've identified there are some congestions that we can need to get, being an exporter, get things out. So when I look at MISO and studying Tranche 1, this is an area that was identified. There would be benefits on building this 345 KV line. So my first question is, if it's been identified in the Tranche 1, can we quantify those benefits for MDU and Otter Tail to look at it? That's my first question. On has that been, I guess I assumed, and I shouldn't do that, that was studied. So can we get some quantification numbers on that, the benefit of that line? So that's my first question. And I guess if we can get that, then that might lead to some more discussion. So I don't know. I'm going to look to Adam and Chris or Julie to maybe give me some history there on that based on the 2 years that I've been on the commission and in that area that was has been identified. And I thought MISO maybe did a good job on identifying that. And this is the only project in Tranche 1 that North Dakota has what I would say is maybe benefit. So I'll give that to...
So I've got a couple handouts here that might help.
Got the conversation here.
Thanks, Adam.
Put this in the wrong order. I've got this one here. Okay, yeah. I think it's in that order then. So we're here to kind of discuss the Jamestown to Ellendale 345 KV line that was part of MISO's Tranche 1. I believe it was passed by the MISO Board of Directors in June of 2022. So the first page you see, it is an overview. When we think of LRTP projects, we kind of have to think of them more in a portfolio approach. And in this particular line, it happens to have been studied and paired well with not just the single line, which is the Jamestown to Ellendale line, but also the Big Stone South to Alexandria to Casey's Crossing. When it comes down to the benefits, there are benefits in terms of figuring out what kind of reliability benefits there are. And in this case, you'll see that this is from a MISO presentation that indicates that the Jamestown to Ellendale line, as well as in combination with the Big Stone South to Casey's Crossings, relieves 40 elements with excess loadings for the first transmission element loss, or the N-1, and 70 elements with excess of loading for the second transmission element. when MISO first started going through their analysis, they looked at several alternatives. They focused a lot on six of them. They look at largely what kind of effect in terms of loadings it'll have, and it'll compare to see if, okay, if it can identify a mini portfolio project, if you will, that relieves the most, you know. And they also tend to look somewhat at the cost of those lines, but really it's a reliability analysis. And they also then perform an economic analysis on it as well. So kind of getting back to the question on the benefits that this provides, this first page shows for zone 1 through 7, as we are located in zone 1, so that would be to the yellow to the right of that chart. Now, this is the most conservative, what you call cost-benefit analysis. So the entire portfolio was cost $10.3 billion. And then they figure out, okay, well, what kind of benefits can we attach to it such that the benefit-cost ratio is 1.0 or greater? So per the tariff, that's the hurdle that we're looking at. And what do I mean by the most conservative one is that they also show this for a 40-year present value for benefits, as well as they increase the value of lost load that they give their other metrics to something that is probably a bit unrealistic. So I think when people talk about, and when you hear numbers reported, they're talking about these numbers, which is the most conservative of them. So you can see that we're in zone 1. So the minimum is 2.8, and then that's where the max comes in. So we've always tend to focus on the minimum benefits that we can achieve. And if we then go and look at the second page.
And just to clarify, this is for the whole portfolio, not just this line.
Right.
And yeah. Not just the two lines. It's the whole, all of tranche one.
Right. And we have asked before for them to break it down further and more granularly. You know, that's maybe something that we're working on, but these benefit metrics and BC cost ratios are for the entire $10.3 billion. Because they're all supposed to work together in one portfolio to deliver value. So if we take a look at the
question on that one, Adam. The inset over there on the right, is that North Dakota Resource Additions by 2039?
Yes, they are.
So can you talk about the assumptions that drove that?
Okay, so the assumptions that drive that is that starting off in the futures process, when we first start taking a look at where to place these lines, we have to take a look at, okay, we have to meet certain IRPs, right? We have to meet our IRP goals.
And we meaning MISO. MISO.
MISO says.
Yeah.
So MISO will collect every utility's IRPs, and they'll take that and say, okay, we need to, we need to achieve that. And then they also will meet a certain amount of goals that are not, that are just goals, that are just, you know, kind of wishes, if you will, that aren't mandated by the legislature, for instance.
So give me an example of a goal that we might bring forward.
If it was...
That's not us, really. We don't have these.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
other states that have their goals, and they'll do a certain percentage of them.
Yep.
Well, we have a goal, but it's
well. These are more like state. The IRPs are what the companies are planning, right? So they assume that's going to happen.
because the companies are planning for those. So they work to build a system that is going to meet the needs of their members, which are the investor, the people with the IRPs. Mm-hmm. And then they'll meet the then they'll build a system to reach a certain percentage of, say, Minnesota's renewable mandates or Wisconsin's or whatever. That's the other piece, component.
Yeah, and in this component...
Of the futures. Yep. These are the futures.
Yeah, yeah, and that's another
help dictate how. And they're not, like, you know, meeting 100% of any future. They're just used as the guidelines to begin to imagine what kind of system we're going to need. Nobody really knows, but these are the things that, you know, direct and guide what this future system is, they think is going to need based on what people are putting in their plans.
And that's an important point because we're looking at the year 2039. And by 2039, in this particular case of what all of this benefit metrics is based upon is that you meet 100% of your IRP goals. Or not we, but myself will say we're going to meet 100% of our IRP goals and we're going to meet 85% of our aspirational goals that Commissioner Fedorchuk was just describing.
And I do think it's important to reemphasize that MISO is trying to build a system that enables the meeting of those. They aren't meeting them. They're building a system that allows their members to meet their IRP goals and, like Adam said, 85% of the state mandates. As a planning, that's how they plan. It's their planning protocol. So back to this resource additions. Mm-hmm. This is based on what they're seeing in North Dakota IRPs, mostly?
IRPs, they will put in some units that are model built.
For reliability.
For reliability standards. As well as engineering kind of judgment, I guess, if you will. You'll notice that there's, you know, in this case, you know, there's actually a combined cycle gas being built. The conversion of maybe the coal.
They're looking at converting that to.
Yeah,
but in their assumptions.
In their assumptions. So,
do they take into consideration the EPA regulations?
They haven't.
I don't think so. Okay.
No, they haven't.
All right.
So then, kind of moving on. To the next page. So these are the benefits that they've identified. First benefit is...
Let's talk for a minute about how these get developed.
Yeah, okay.
Because each one of these processes is like a big, long, you know, stakeholder input on identifying what benefits are going to be used to measure the overall benefit calculation, and these are where you get some questions from the IMM. He's pretty squishy on some of these benefit metrics, but even more so on tranche two. So anyway, was there anything in particular about these benefit metrics that raised concern in the stakeholder process, Adam? I mean, I know we said that we objected to the decarbonization benefit being used. And so then in response to that, they took that out and told us what our cost benefit would be without it. And it was still higher than the one threshold, significantly higher.
Yeah. And there's very little benefit that's derived from this decarbonization benefit. The BC, the benefit cost ratio, when you remove it, goes from 2.8 to 2.6. So that's kind of saying if you spend like a dollar, you get $2.06 back, kind of.
So the two overwhelmingly large factors in the benefit column for zone one are, one, congestion and fuel savings, two, avoided capital cost of local resource investment, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct, yep.
Okay, for this project, not tranche one, but this project, and for North Dakota, not MISO, what are the avoided capital costs of local resource investment that this, what costs does this avoid?
So this avoids the building of local generation that would cost more.
Like the gas plant that we ordered Xcel to build, for example? That's the only one I can think of.
Again, it's modeled. It's not necessarily.
Yeah, it's kind of like when we had the original MVP portfolio, we could share resources and then reduce local overbuild. So if we're able to spread that out with transmission, then there's a point in which you're supposed to hit the sweet spot, and it's called the bathtub curve, right? In which you want to put your transmission overlay on your resources such that you're all in a sharing pool, and you're able to then not build something, not have a grid that's balkanized such that we have no wires, and we've got to overbuild a ton of maybe thermal generation because we couldn't then use a renewable source maybe.
So the biggest share of our benefits are avoiding costs that we can't identify.
Well, that's not, they're modeled costs out to 2039. I mean, you have to look at the time frame. So, and that these might be good questions for, because MISO should be able to identify those things for this project, for actually this line or those two lines. So that's probably a question we could ask them for. Mm-hmm. To address.
And
I think it's an important one to understand, you know, how all this stuff is pulled together.
The other one that is very significant in that is the congestion and fuel savings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think any of us that have in recent years watched LMP prices have seen the congestion that's over in that area, correct?
Yeah.
And this study was approved in 2022, so it was done well before Applied Digital was even discussed. And because my own just occasional but pretty frequent viewing of LMP prices, I'm seeing in the heat map, I'm seeing a lot less congestion problems over there. And we've only got the first phase of Applied Digital going. So I don't know that these congestion benefits are really there for us anymore either.
They might not be. It's a fair question. And also, Adam's not defending MISO.
I know. Okay.
Adam is not MISO.
Well, so, it's kind of bringing their case.
He's trying so that we can understand it.
And I guess that was my question in looking at some of this is how much of this, I mean, gets updated, you know, as things go on, like Randy brought up, Applied Digital. I mean, how is that fed into MISO and updated so we have more current information? I mean,
once these projects are approved, they don't go back and update all this. Like, this was agreed on and approved by the board a year, more than a year ago, so they don't go back and keep changing these.
Okay.
And just re-justifying the case or changing the case.
Well, I would have to say re-justify, but just more accurate data that we as PUCs could have. Mm-hmm. Like when the tranche one, when this case comes before us, we have more information, but lesson learned.
And we don't ever see all of tranche one.
Right.
This is the only line we'll see.
Right. But things have changed since then. I mean, point taken.
Yeah. We could ask MISO for them to provide us that for this. I don't know if they've got it at that granular level.
To provide.
The congestion, fuel savings, avoided capital costs of local resource investment. Well, even all the benefit metrics, if they can, for zone one, for just Jamestown.
Just, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Or could MDU, could MDU provide us any of that?
Mm-hmm. I doubt it. They don't run the models.
Yeah, they wouldn't have access to that level of information and detail that MISO
would
have.
I got my answer.
And the thing is, the other thing to remember, and this is just part of the reality of MISO, is if you look at the size of our zone, I mean, there's a lot of what's happening in Minnesota and part of Wisconsin driving zone one. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality for us in North Dakota and MISO. Zone one includes all of Minnesota and a chunk of Wisconsin.
So especially on the fuel cost savings, it's one, because both RTOs do that kind of comparison when they run modeling. And it's one thing I've really struggled with in our zone. Usually we have trapped generation that can't get out. And when they do their model, well, this zone or this area is going to benefit by that trapped generation getting out. And, well, I suppose the zone as a whole is going to benefit, but our prices go up as a result of that. So that negative congestion that's happening down there changes to even keel with the rest of the system. And primarily in this instance, I think Minnesota's prices probably go down a slight bit while ours go up to what the rest of the zone is seeing.
And this is kind of one of my concerns here is, so our ratepayers pay to build this, and the benefits are looked at, well, there's this investment here, some big benefit, but it's mostly to whoever the new developer is that comes in and builds another wind farm, a few landowners, but not to most of these Otter Tail and MDU customers. And I'm not seeing nearly the benefits or congestion improvements as what this seems to want to indicate.
Well, the other issue that I think is, the two other issues that are relevant are the reliability savings or reliability impacts, and are the access for our broader generation to get out. I mean, if there's congestion, there's generators in North Dakota that are being curtailed, and depending on price, you know, that hurts them. And we, you know, the higher priced ones are the ones probably being curtailed first. So that's another North Dakota issue.
You know, I guess it's a separate argument of whether this is the right time to have the battle, but therein lies a lot of the reason for me wanting to take on the battle, and I don't even know where or how the battle would occur, but okay, if the issue is somebody else out of state's need for energy and some developer that wants to come in and set up some more wind farms here, fine. Pay for it, not our ratepayers all the time. And so, yes, the RTO forces this cost allocation on us, but if we don't fight for it or fight against it successfully, guess what? We're going to be paying for, was it three that's all south? So maybe not one of them. but we're going to be paying for all the rest of them too. And when better than now to fight it?
I don't disagree, and we did fight it, but
at MISO.
At MISO, yeah.
I'm talking about at FERC.
So is that how it play out? I mean, going off of that? Tell me if...
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you walk me... Well, first of all, does anybody have anything else, Chris or Adam, to add to these?
Just the scale was a...
I was just going to add that the scale of Tranche 1, the numbers that we got from MDU and from Otter Tail were a little like $10.5 billion or somewhere between $10 and $10.5 billion. And the cost per megawatt hour that they were estimating in 2031, which was the max rate, was about $2.54 per megawatt. Or megawatt hour. So just as kind of a scale. Now that... How that impacts, say, residential customers is going to depend upon the company, because each of the companies has their own allocation methodology for transmission costs. But just to kind of give you an average on things, so Tranche 1 on average would be about, you know, $2.54 per megawatt hour. So I'll throw NSP as an example, does a direct allocation per megawatt hour. So that would affect their customers by $2.54 per month for 1,000 kilowatts or 1 megawatt of usage or megawatt hour of usage per month. But then we talked about Tranche 2, 3, 4. You know, as you're getting up into that $50 billion range, then, you know, you're talking $10, $15 per megawatt hour as a relative scale.
Okay, then I need to be corrected here and find out where I'm wrong. When we had our
informal
on July 8th, I didn't write down $2.54 a month. I wrote $3.15 a month for MDU and $5.85 for Otter Tail.
Correct. So as I said, MDU and Otter Tail have an allocation methodology that's different for residential and for commercial, industrial. All that. I use NSP as an example because they do a per megawatt hour allocation, so it's a straight. It's a different methodology, but it's I guess you could say cleaner. But the average that MISO's allocating, their number was $2.54, based upon their estimates at the peak in 2031 when all the projects are up and running and before they start to amortize off. So yes, you are correct. Like MDU's number was $3.15. The memo that I had was $5.75, and I think Matt Olson came back and amended that to $5.85 per megawatt hour. So that's because they used different methodology for allocating those transmission costs. So you are correct.
All right. So I think Randy raised a good question about how, if we deny this, say, what is the result? Where does it go? Or do the companies, where can the companies protest? Or MISO, I guess.
Well, I'm still getting acquainted with this case, and I know you guys asked me to come in here and have some discussion. But if we issue an order with a denial, obviously it depends on the basis of the denial and it depends on the basis of the challenge. It could either be in federal district court or it could be in state court, and so it would be up to the issue. It really is being appealed.
So the Otter Tail or MDU would likely then decide to take it.
It would likely be Otter Tail or MDU.
Or MISO.
Could MISO? Do you have any?
Again, depending on the issue and where it's at.
Well, let's say, sure. I mean, if it went to court and the courts backed the commission on a denial, or no, overturned the commission on a denial, mm-hmm. Well, then it would move forward unless we appealed. But let's say they backed our decision on a denial. Wouldn't at some point this get to be a FERC thing over whether the states can stop MISO, and this could be SPP too, stop RTO-approved projects through their PCNN process. Isn't that something that is going to have to get determined at some point, or they're just all going to go to load pays?
So I'm guessing the issue that you're presenting is an interstate commerce issue from the discussion that you're providing. And I'd be happy to have some additional discussion with that, but I probably would not want to be having with that an open meeting without having an opportunity to review the tariffs that we're discussing.
So we've kind of touched on these, but I want to re-emphasize two points. One is, yes, we can talk about avoiding congestion or avoiding additional investment costs. I haven't found any basis for those other than someone who likes doing projects, put the numbers together. I can't see anything. I will point out, though, that among the project benefits are to accommodate new electric generation projects. And to me, that's who ought to be paying at least a good part of this, if not all of it, because that, to me, is the key benefit in this, is to add the new generators. And to the extent that's for decarbonization or to meet other states' policy goals, irregardless, the point is to add that generation. And I think that is the key benefit that this is looking to solve. The other, though, has to do with reliability. In our discussion, this isn't in like the presentation, I don't think, but I'm using my recollection. Correct me if it's wrong. The real reliability issue in North Dakota that was highlighted as an example that this could take care of was, the very near miss at Jamestown. And I think it's been said before, but kudos again to Otter Tail for still hanging on to that old generator in town there that almost never gets used and being able to keep Jamestown going as they did. But as this plays out in my mind, this project, what I have heard was, in order to add all the new generation, it generally flows from that, like an Ellendale point down through South Dakota and Minnesota and out. But if there's problems there, they need this alternative route to get it up to Jamestown, and then from there on, it can flow through Fargo and away. Okay? As far as to add the new generation, I guess that makes sense. It also tells me there's plenty of capacity in the transmission lines between Jamestown and Fargo for all this to flow that way, which tells me when XL builds their gas plant there, it can flow the other way, and that can just as easily be used to help solve any potential energy shortfalls in Jamestown. And so I think the one investment that I can see that this is going to eliminate the need for is that generation plant. And I guess it's fine as long as we're willing to have service when it's windy, but not when it's not. I don't think most of the people are.
Randy, did you review the project benefits identified in the company's application?
I have, but it's been a while, and I don't know if I have.
How did we... We had an informal, right, on
yep.
this?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we...
Was that presented then, or was that in the case earlier?
Well, it's
I think
both. It's in their application and...
What you're looking at, though,
this is their application.
This.
Right.
Okay.
This is the application.
What page?
11. And to some extent, page 9 is the project need. I just don't know when all these problems, these reliability problems, like the 40 transmission elements with excessive thermal loadings for N1 contingencies and 70 elements with excessive loading, and then down below, the project improves voltages in the Red River Valley by relieving 97 voltage violations and 91 voltage violations for N11 contingencies. Like, how many of those are North Dakota customers? How much of that is a North Dakota issue? And I mean, I want to know. I would have to be reminded of that. I'd have to have a more technical discussion, I think, with the company to understand the implications for our customers of not having this line.
Isn't N-1 what drives congestion pricing?
Adam?
If it's overloaded, it could be overloaded for a number of reasons. You know, an outage definitely is it. I mean, that creates congestion. Such that if you can't fire up or move electrons from point A to point B, and then you might have to go and fire up a more expensive peaker, for instance, if you've got a line outage, for instance. Something like that.
But congestion pricing, and this is, I think, the case in both RTOs, it isn't because the lines that are in operation at that moment can't handle the load that's going across them. Mm-hmm. It's in the event of a loss of your biggest element, mm-hmm. the remaining system isn't able to pick that load up without tripping.
It doesn't have to be, like you can get congestion if in the event that you had an outage,
right?
Then but you're not actually in an outage.
Right. No, I absolutely agree that you're not in an outage, but the pricing for congestion, I think, is based on that N-1 scenario.
Yeah, that's how the grid operates. Yeah. Yep.
So, all that is to say, I think that's a good portion of what they're speaking to in the 40 elements with excessive loading for the first transmission element loss.
Yeah, that's.
I think that's largely congestion. I don't know does that make some sense?
And so?
I'm not drawing any conclusions from that. There was just, you started to kind of talk about it a little bit, and I don't know that that's the entire
answer. So the benefits of relieving that are, it's not a reliability concern.
I'm not even saying that definitively. I think your question was what those 40 elements are, and I think probably a good chunk of them are probably that N-1 scenario where overloading.
Well, no. I'll put it a lot more simply.
Okay.
That's a bunch of technical mumbo jumbo. What I want to know is, how does this matter to North Dakota customers?
Sure.
Does it? Or is it just a bunch of sentences to make us think like, geez, that sounds bad. We better prove this. Right? Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it is a big problem for North Dakota customers. Maybe it isn't. I can't tell by this. And I don't recall exploring that deeply in our informal with them. So I would want to know that so we don't. So I can have that information developing this and making my decision anyways.
Do you want to know that from the company or from myself?
The company.
The company.
Okay. It's in their application.
Okay.
So just for clarification on that, so they're basically saying when they analyze this solution, they're kind of looking at it in conjunction with the Big Stone Alexandria and the other projects on Zone 1. So you're saying, okay, well, I get that this applied to all of Zone 1, but of that, of these issues, how much of the issue applies to North Dakota specifically? So we're kind of getting lumped in with the whole zone, right. and this is the issue to the whole zone, but how much of it applies specifically to us?
Yeah, and what is the impact of this? Mm-hmm. Is it a price issue? Is it a lot, you know, we can't get power at certain times, it's hurting the lines. Like, what is the actual, what are the issues that it's causing? Yeah, and same, I mean, the company might have a problem. MISO needs to get us the more specifics of the impacts of this project on the benefit metrics that they've used here. And if they can get those for North Dakota versus all of Zone 1, that would be helpful too.
You know, when it's simplified down, and I don't remember who was speaking at the time, I presume Otter Tail because it was about Jamestown, but between the two, when we had the informal, when they talked about that situation in Jamestown that I referenced earlier, okay, yeah, that is something that happened, I'm aware of it. It made a good case in point to me. I was thinking like, okay, now I'm seeing some benefit here. Until, like I said, then I thought more about, except for supposedly within a little over a year, things usually run late, but in the relatively near term, we have a new gas plant going to Fargo. That should be able to do it. So I guess when they just say, oh, well, there's all these benefits, it's not very persuasive to me. Mm-hmm. They should tell me what they are. Where the shortages are, what can't we do, and we'll see once whether it seems to me that, or it seems to us as a group, as a body, whether those benefits then are primarily going to the ratepayers that are being asked to pay for this, or to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good questions. And as you said, like, we tried in the cost allocation discussion to make these points. They didn't win the day. This is our next tool to try to address them.
And just while we're on this, legal question. Oh, did you have something else?
Well, I just, but I'm not, I'm also, you know, I definitely, I'm not sure that this doesn't have just merits for North Dakota on a technical side, so I'm not, like, I'm very open to that, hearing what the benefits are to our customers, because I think that they're, and to our generators, I guess, I'd like to be evaluating that along with it. So.
I think you kind of covered it.
Clarify what I think I heard. So we're going to get a response from MISO on the benefit metrics for Zone 1 on this line specifically. So I think if Adam can reach out, that's probably the most efficient. And then whatever response you get, if you want to pass that through Chris. And then Chris, if you can work with the Otter Tail and MDU on a response for what these element savings and benefits are. And then, you know, if it's reliability benefit, how, in what circumstance. And we'll get all of that submitted into a couple of docket entries, hopefully, rather than just some emails flying around. And
you know, yes, I know these things take time, but there's a reason why they take time. So, so people don't make bad decisions. But it seems like, as far as anything having to do with congestion in that area of the state, this should be recalculated based on Applied Digital's second phase being in effect, because I understand they're pretty far along with it already, and the first phase is already going. Like I say, from my just viewing of heat maps, it's having quite an impact. So maybe I'm wrong about that, but it doesn't appear that way to me.
But it's a good point to evaluate.
Yeah, and then maybe they can provide information about what additional generation they've cited there in their long-range transmission planning that drove the need for these lines, because it isn't just what exists today. It's much more what they modeled to be coming. So, you know, that is part of this equation. So they should explain that.
The generation that showed up?
Where they, yeah, that's going to, you know, it isn't just planning. Well, we took care of the congestion now because we've got Applied Digital there. There's a bunch more. How many more wind farms did they model being developed in the eastern part of North Dakota that will drive congestion up again? And those were driven probably by Minnesota environmental goals and others. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be helpful to know what kind of generation they modeled in that area.
Yeah, yeah, and where.
For this.
Yeah, and where. Yeah, we can get that.
And I think separately, I mean, we're going to work with Jack as far as maybe some next steps if denied, just for an understanding as far as litigation.
Be happy to have that discussion. I would note as well, though, after we receive all the documents, all the information that's necessary, it may be worth considering appointing advocacy staff if we need to flesh out certain issues a little better and maybe have a formal hearing on it as well.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd be open to that because I really do want to understand the company side of it and the benefits that they're seeing.
Anything else? Especially you, Sherry.
No, I think this was, first of all, I want to say thanks to everyone to getting this lined up so quickly on the work session. And no, I have nothing further. I look forward to the additional information to receive to evaluate.
Okay, with that, thanks everybody. And this work session is concluded. I have it down here somewhere.